This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, October 25th, 2001. I'm Verna Avery Brown. U.S. cluster bombs kill 9 Afghani civilians, prompting U.N. warnings against their use. New reports show the anthrax being mailed is probably made in the USA. And by week's end, the police will have new powers to wiretap and conduct secret searches. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. A Pakistani man detained in the FBI's ethnic profiling sweep 1 week after September 11th has been found dead in a New Jersey jail, where he faced no criminal charges but was among nearly 1,000 Arabs, Muslims, and Asians rounded up by the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Robert Knight reports from New York.
Guards at the Hudson County Jail claim to have found 55-year-old Queens resident Mohammed Butt dead of what jail doctor Lionel Anisette says was a heart attack. Butt had been held on immigration charges for overstaying his visa, even though he had accepted an immigration judge's order to leave the United States. Butt had complained recently of dental pain and was given tetracycline. Upon discovery, his corpse was examined for anthrax with negative results because, according to the jail doctor, quoting, the man's homeland was Pakistan. Plus the fact that he was arrested after the events of September 11th, those two facts led to the assumption that there might be a connection to anthrax. FBI officials said that they had interviewed Butt but had no further interest in him. Nevertheless, he remained jailed until the discovery of his death at 10:45 Tuesday morning. In New York, I'm Robert Knight for Free Speech Radio News.
A human rights complaint against the Mexican government has been filed today by supporters of two internationally known environmentalists, claiming they have been wrongfully imprisoned. Kent Patterson reports.
Supporters of jailed Mexican activists Rodolfo Montiel and Teodoro Cabrera say they plan to file a complaint against the Mexican government today with the Organization of American States Inter-American Human Rights Commission in Washington. The petition will call for the immediate and unconditional release of Montiel and Cabrera. The two men were arrested by the Mexican army more than 2 years ago and accused of drugs and weapons violations. But supporters of the pair, including Greenpeace and the Sierra Club, contend the activists were framed after opposing logging contracting for Boise Cascade. The announced filing of the human rights complaint comes a few days after one of Montiel and Cabrera's original lawyers, Digno Ochoa, was shot to death in a Mexico City murder authorities are calling politically tainted. The Mexican Congress this week added its voice to those condemning that crime. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Kent Patterson reporting.
Partisanship echoed through the Capitol today as Senate Democrats criticized the Republican tax program approved by the House while trying to find common ground to save the nation's economy. Gareth Schweitzer has more from D.C.
Three economists testified on Capitol Hill today that consumer tax breaks, not new corporate tax cuts, are the best way to jumpstart the sagging economy. Their comments are in part a response to the House bill favored by Republicans that passed by a 2-vote margin yesterday after moving rapidly through committee. Senator Edward Kennedy, who is sponsoring legislation that emphasizes unemployment spending, health care benefits, and job retraining, believes that Republican-supported legislation overwhelmingly benefits the rich.
The House proposal is plainly unfair. It provides $115 billion in permanent tax breaks for the wealthy individuals and corporations, while targeting less than $14 billion to those that need help the most, the nation's working families.
Republican senators, including New Mexico Senator Pete Domenici, believe that any Senate legislation will receive considerably more time in debate than its counterpart in the House of Representatives. From Washington, D.C., I'm Gareth Schweitzer for Free Speech Radio News.
And finally, the head of the nation's oldest and largest listener-sponsored radio network has resigned under pressure. Jeff Brady has more from New York.
Pacifica's executive director, Bessie Wash, was asked yesterday to resign from her position by Robert Farrell, the board chairman.
Yes, I've accepted her resignation. It was a request that I made, and she honored my request. I'm following our personnel policies. It's something that's got to be addressed by the executive committee, and I'm also adding it to the board agenda so that I am following the procedures and processes of the Pacifica Foundation.
Farrell refused to give reasons or comment on his decision. Wash was named the executive director by Mary Frances Berry, the former chair of the Pacifica Board of Directors. Activists have been critical of Wash's 18-month tenure during what they say had mainstreamed Pacifica's 50-year tradition of progressive programming. They also criticized Wash for spending an estimated $2 million on armed guards, public relations firms, and high-priced attorneys. Joanne Meredith, Pacifica's development director, has been named interim executive director to replace Wash. Meredith also has a history of support with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jeff Brady in New York.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
U.S. forces peppered Taliban front lines with cluster bombs for the first time today. Military officials said the cluster bombs, fist-sized armor-penetrating anti-personnel explosives that scatter over a wide area, were part of intense overnight raids on front lines north of Kabul, including Bagram Air Base, Keshinda, and Dara Yusuf. The United Nations had already reported use of the ordnance in the western city of Herat, but this is the first time they have been reported on front lines. The United Nations and many humanitarian organizations have urged the United States to stop using the weapon, which, like landmines, can have devastating long-term effects. Any ordnance that fails to explode on impact can continue to kill and maim long after combat has ended. Jeremy Scahill has more.
U.S. warplanes bombed cities and villages across Afghanistan around the clock today, as new video footage emerged out of Afghanistan showing shocking images of widespread human suffering caused by the U.S. attacks. But the Bush administration insists it will not slow its attacks and will continue to bomb during the Muslim holy days of Ramadan if it deems it necessary. Today, President Bush visited Thurgood Marshall Elementary School in Washington, D.C. He called on the students there to participate in his war.
Thanks for letting me come by. We're here talking about how we can best conduct a war against evil. And you can play a part. You can be an integral part of that.
As Bush was speaking, news agencies inside Afghanistan reported that U.S. bombs had hit a busload of civilians in the southern Afghan city of Kandahar. Preliminary reports say that 10 people were killed in the attack. Today at the Pentagon, General Richard Myers, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, appeared to reinforce what is a common view around the Muslim world, that the U.S. places a higher value on American lives than those of the civilians in Afghanistan.
To be honest, the one number, the one horrific number that stands foremost in my mind is the over 5,000 men, women, and children that were killed on 11 September.
International agencies today are stepping up their calls for a halt to the bombing, while the United Nations is expressing grave concern over the Pentagon's widespread use of deadly cluster bombs. These munitions are dropped from planes in metal casings. They have their own parachute. As they slowly descend, they open in midair, sending hundreds of bomblets over a wide area before they burst into deadly pieces of shrapnel, shredding everything in their path. Today, Dan Kelly, the head of the UN's mining program for Afghanistan, described the scene in a western Afghan village hit by U.S. cluster bombs.
A small village called Shakar Kalal, just to the northeast of Herat City, it was hit by a bomb which included cluster munitions. The village contains about 45 houses. 20 of these houses were either completely destroyed or partially destroyed. 14 people were injured and 9 people were killed. And one of these 9 was killed after he touched the parachute of the cluster munition.
The Pentagon continues to deny it is targeting civilians in Afghanistan. It has just hired the Washington public relations firm, the Rendon Group, to help it conduct what the Pentagon calls its propaganda war. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jeremy Scahill.
In Peshawar, Pakistan, a coalition of religious and political leaders are winding up a two-day summit to determine who will replace the ruling Taliban in Afghanistan if and when they're uprooted by the U.S. alliance. Free Speech Radio News correspondent Fariba Nawa is at the summit. We spoke with her about accomplishments over the past 2 days.
They had two resolutions. One was a demand to stop the bombing. They want a political solution to the war. And they have asked or more ordered America to discuss the problem with the Taliban and seek a nonviolent solution out of the problem. And secondly, they asked that a coalition government or representative government be installed immediately. The meeting was attended by tribal chiefs, religious leaders, scholars, refugees in Peshawar, and low-ranking members of the Northern Alliance, and there was actually a moderate Taliban there. He was not an official. He spoke but asked that he remain anonymous, and he was very passionate and spoke about unity and the fact that Afghans need to set aside their differences. He said something really interesting. He said that Afghans have more weapons now than they ever have had, but they have never been so beaten by the foreigners who provided them those weapons. And he admitted that he was a moderate Taliban and said that he supports the installation of the former king as the head of state temporarily.
Would this former king be installed as the immediate head of state under this coalition government that was discussed at the summit?
Yes. The man who organized this, his name is Pir Sayyid Ahmad Gailani. He is a royalist who has been trying to bring the king back for the last 20 years. Even during the war with the Soviets, Gailani was active, and he is himself a Pashtun from the same tribe as the king. But they're moderates. They've always been moderates. And he is a religious figure and very pious man and respected in the community. When he comes into a room, everybody gets up and there are sighs of admiration. He's also very accepting of different ethnicities.
And he is a Muslim?
He's a Muslim, of course. The importance of this meeting was not so much what it was about or what it was calling for. It was the fact that it could take place in Pakistan. A year ago, Gailani was struggling to form these kind of coalitions and meetings and was practically banned in Peshawar, which is basically controlled by many extremists. As the meeting was going on, there was a demonstration of some 200 anti-king voices shouting slogans against Zahir Shah, the king, and supporting the Taliban's actions in Afghanistan. So demonstration was not very strong at all, and it was over after an hour.
Free Speech Radio News correspondent Fariba Nawa speaking with us from Peshawar, Pakistan. An entire portion of a Senate office building that housed aides to Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle will stay sealed off indefinitely. Senator Daschle told reporters today that anthrax had been found in a new location in the building for the second time in a week. This, as the Washington Post reports, the anthrax mailed to Senator Daschle contained a sophisticated military-grade chemical additive thought to be available in only three countries, Iraq, the United States, and the former Soviet Union. And as Aaron Glantz reports, leading scientists and law enforcement experts agree the anthrax was probably made in the USA.
Iraq's Deputy Prime Minister Tariq Aziz denies his country is behind anthrax-laden letters mailed to New York and Washington. He says his government destroyed all its chemical and biological weapons after the Gulf War.
We worked on anthrax in the 80s and in the 90s. We destroyed all our anthrax assets.
Federal investigators apparently agree. The Washington Post quotes what it calls government officials with direct knowledge of the anthrax investigation. The source told Post authorities believe it is unlikely that the spores were originally produced in the former Soviet Union or Iraq. That's because the anthrax strain and chemical additive are identical to a biological weapon developed by the U.S. after World War II. Dorothy Pressler is with the Federation of American Scientists.
We did once use the AIM strain in our own offensive biological program here in the United States. We had an active biological weapons program involving a number of pathogens, of which anthrax was one. This program was shut down in 1969 by order of President Nixon, and the order went out to destroy all stocks of the produced pathogens.
But Pressler says the U.S. government has continued to experiment with military-grade anthrax since then and has distributed it to researchers, universities, and governments around the world.
These strains were exchanged, sold, assigned to other laboratories around the world for research.
And that means biological warfare technology developed by the U.S. military could be employed by any number of people anywhere in the world. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Aaron Glantz.
By the end of the week, law enforcement authorities will likely have sweeping new powers to watch over and investigate nearly every aspect of American life. The Senate gave its approval to President Bush's anti-terrorism bill today, and the president has said he will sign it tomorrow. The new powers include provisions against money laundering, expanded use of roving wiretaps, and grants law enforcement the ability to conduct secret searches. Cotta Mester has more from Washington.
Calling the expanded police powers audacious, Senate Democrat Russ Feingold cast the only vote against the anti-terrorism package. He voiced concern that the provisions in the bill were too broadly defined and ripe for abuse. Feingold pointed to the current activities of the Justice Department during its national probe into terrorism.
There is ample reason for concern, and I've been somewhat troubled in the past 6 weeks by the potential loss of commitment in the Congress and in the country to traditional civil liberties. As it seeks to combat terrorism, the Justice Department is making extraordinary use of its power to arrest and detain individuals, jailing hundreds of people on immigration violations and arresting more than a dozen material witnesses not charged with any crime.
Amnesty International reported this week that among the over 800 detained during the Justice Department's probe into terrorism, the physical conditions for some in custody violate international standards for humane treatment. They call the conditions unduly punitive because many of those behind bars have not been charged with any crime. The human rights group also questioned yesterday's death of a detained Pakistani man. Senate Republican Orrin Hatch argued that the civil liberties of a few is a small price to pay to guarantee the safety of the entire nation.
The senator from Wisconsin worries about the, quote, possible, unquote, loss of civil liberties, and I think that's laudable. But I am more concerned about the actual loss of the thousands of lives that have been lost and the potential of other lives that may be lost because we don't give law enforcement the tools that law enforcement needs.
But human rights advocates are troubled by new reports indicating the federal government is considering deporting suspected terrorists to countries where torture is a practiced form of interrogation. Craig Powers, acting director for grassroots advocacy for Amnesty International USA, says it does not bode well for civil liberties.
It's absolutely unacceptable. Torture is against the laws of the United States. It's against international law. It violates the Convention Against Torture, which the United States has agreed to, and certainly raises a lot of questions about the efforts of the United States in its foreign policy and human rights policy to advocate on behalf of human rights and human rights defenders around the world.
The bill is expected to reach President Bush's desk by Friday. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, I'm Cotta Mester.
33 amendments to the Turkish Constitution enacted this week should improve human rights in Turkey. The amendments establish individual rights of freedom of speech and assembly previously unknown in the country. But as James Smoot reports from Istanbul, these changes may look good on paper, but this may not be a revolution for civil rights in Turkey.
The new provisions include greater language rights, protection from illegal searches, and fewer restrictions on freedom of expression. But civil rights in Turkey are still subservient to state interests. Even with new protections for freedom of expression, activists in Turkey have found it impossible to take to the street and protest American military action in Afghanistan. Police have violently dispersed every demonstration against the war to date. Özcan Kilic, a human rights lawyer in Istanbul, says the law itself is not important. During the 1992 Gulf crisis and the attack on Iraq, there were plenty of demonstrations against the war, but the police did not put them down. It was the same constitution. Police action against demonstrators have no relation to the law. The state is trying to create an image that Turkey is on the same side of America in this war with the full support of the people. The government wants to say that our people do not oppose the policies of the United States. In essence, the suppression of demonstration is spin management. Like Yasser Arafat in Palestine, the Turkish government is hoping to show solid support for American military action in order to get increased support from the United States. While Arafat wants a Palestinian state, Turkish leaders want something more prosaic, money. Turkey is in its worst economic crisis since the Second World War and is in desperate need of a financial bailout. Özcan was at pains to point out that individual civil liberties were already defined under the old laws. Like the old laws, the new versions provide special circumstances where liberties can be suspended. Vague conditions like preserving the public peace and national security mean the state can intervene at will to suppress dissent. According to Özcan Kilic, It is an empty gesture.
Neden gönülde diyorum? Şimdi koşullar da Türkiye'ye böyle düzenlemeleri yapmaya günlük hayatta yok.
I call these changes artificial because serious opposition to the state no longer exists. The Kurds, the leftist opposition groups, and even the Islamic groups have been completely suppressed. The state does not see the surviving groups and ideologies as a danger anymore. So with no real opposition, the state can enact these changes.
Dolayısıyla korkmadan bu düzenlemeleri hayata geçirebilir şimdilik.
While it is difficult to get out into the streets, human rights in Turkey have improved in some important areas. Torture of political suspects in custody has greatly diminished, but it continues to be ordinary for common criminal cases. Much of the problem with civil liberties in Turkey may not come from the state, but rather from deeply ingrained cultural attitudes. One of the problems Özcan Kilic has encountered when defending poorer clients is that they have no idea of what their rights are. There is no cultural foundation for the concept of individual liberty, and most accept authoritarian attitudes.
Çünkü dediğim gibi onlar kültürel olarak toplumun çok alt katmanındalar.
Because they are from the lower social classes, and because they think that their fathers had the right to beat them, and their teachers had the right to beat them, they will not argue against torture. They think they deserve it.
Buna tekabül ettiği için onlardan ses çıkarmıyor ve çıkarmayacaklar da. Tabii hak ettim diyor yani. Evet, hak ettim.
The general public attitude to the new protections for civil liberties is apathy. Turks are more concerned about bleak economic prospects. Moreover, they may have no idea what it all means. For Free Speech Radio News, this is James Smoot, Istanbul.
Tens of thousands of tourism workers across the country have lost their jobs in the wake of September 11th. As occupancy rates have dipped, some hotels have had to trim their payrolls. In Southern California, labor activists say some hotels have taken advantage of the crisis to get rid of outspoken union supporters. And one Southern California city has begun to address the issue. The city of Santa Monica has passed a law that outlaws retaliation against union activists, and it's considering a groundbreaking law that would protect non-union workers that get laid off. Robin Urovich reports.
Dozens of workers rallied along Santa Monica's Ocean Avenue to demand that the city protect laid-off workers. One of them was Jaime Avilar. After 7 years as a housekeeper at the DoubleTree Hotel, he was earning $9.85 an hour. 2 weeks ago, he says a manager called him in and told him his current position would be eliminated. But then, according to Avilar, he was told he could reapply for the job, and his duties would be the same, but not his pay or benefits.
Now they want me to come in as a new worker. I would make minimum wage and not lose my seniority. I could lose my apartment and my car.
Avilar says he's never had problems at work, but he says he has been an outspoken union supporter. The DoubleTree and other luxury hotels in Santa Monica are currently battling union efforts to organize their workers. Avilar says the hotel's been threatening to fire union activists. He thinks with his layoff, it might have made good on its threat. A DoubleTree hotel spokesman declined to comment on Avilar's allegations. Workers laid off from Lowe's Santa Monica Beach Hotel, also the scene of a bitter labor dispute, made similar charges. Lowe's spokeswoman Sarah Harper says they aren't true.
We would never retaliate against any employee, and as a matter of fact, you know, we feel like we've been operating within this all along, and I think it's our goal, it's everybody's goal, to bring people back to work. As soon as business goes up, I mean, we're going to bring people back as quickly as we can.
Harper says she has no objection to anti-worker retaliation laws. She says she also doesn't see anything wrong with the other proposed law that the Santa Monica City Council took up. If that measure is approved, it would require non-union private employers like Lowe's to give priority to laid-off workers when rehiring. Such a law would be controversial because it would be the first in the nation. But Santa Monica Mayor Mike Feinstein says it's necessary.
To ensure that workers are retained and not laid off as a result of this crisis permanently in an act of political opportunism because of their union beliefs.
Mayor Feinstein says the city is already aiding the hotel industry with an emergency appropriation to promote tourism. And he says it's only fair that the city help workers, too. The Hotel Workers Union is hoping to get the city of Los Angeles to pass a similar law. The union says thousands of laid-off tourism workers have inundated L.A. food banks and relief centers. Next week, a mayoral task force will release its recommendations on how Los Angeles can weather the aftermath of September 11th. A worker displacement law isn't on the table yet, but City Councilman Eric Garcetti says he believes there has to be some balance between aid to workers and aid to industry.
There are some of us who want to make sure that if we give relief to certain businesses, like
perhaps concessions at the airport, and we realize that they're hurting, that if we give them breaks, for instance, on their rent, that they make sure that they hire employees that have been laid off first, or that they retain their workers in the first place.
The task force is likely to recommend the city provide displaced workers with job training, help pay their bills, and extend their health insurance. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Robin Jurevich in Santa Monica.
Thousands of mourners crowded Jerusalem's military cemetery today for the funeral of an Israeli cabinet minister assassinated a day earlier as he entered his hotel room. Rahavam Zivi, tourism minister and a retired major general, advocated removal of Palestinians from the West Bank and Gaza. His position was denounced by Palestinians and many Israelis as racist. Meanwhile, Israeli troops shot and killed three more civilians in Bethlehem, even as Christians and Muslims gathered in neighboring churches to mourn the dozens shot in the week since Israel's invasion of the formerly Palestinian-controlled town. Raphael Kraft reports from Bethlehem.
There are hundreds of people dressed in black inside St. Catherine Church, close to the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. Outside, because of the lack of space, relatives and friends, mostly men, are waiting. Above the coffin, still open, the wife of the deceased expresses her despair. Issa Al-Hali, 55, was killed outright by an Israeli bullet yesterday. To go out, the procession is going through a narrow corridor that links St. Catherine to the Nativity. Outside, there are 1,000 gathering on the square. In front, the Muslims from Bethlehem cry their dead too. Usama Dibis, a Force 17 policeman, the personal guard of Yasser Arafat, was killed this morning by the Israeli army. The hymns of the priest in the procession mingle with the muezzin's voice. From the mosque in front of the two churches, he preaches unity in between Christians and Muslims. Relations between the two communities has deteriorated since the Muslim armed factions had been using the mostly Christian town of Beit Jala to shoot at the Jewish settlement of Gilo on the other side of the valley. But in the last week, the mourning has been shared and the two communities have been drawn closer together. On the Nativity Square, the Christians, facing the mosque, are waiting silently for the end of the Muslim ceremony. The coffin, held by relatives, is at the back of the procession. In front, its top is held vertically, surrounded by six men with cagoule and automatic machine guns. After the first volleys of shots, a woman, relative to Issa Al-Hali, the Christian, lets her anger explode. Her face, turned to the skies, implores. She doesn't want revenge again. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Raphael Kraft in Bethlehem.
Free Speech Radio News is a production of Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship. More than 40 reporters in 14 states and 4 continents are on strike against Pacifica Network News for its censorship of legitimate news stories. These reporters are putting their livelihoods on the line. They need your support. For more information, check out our website at www.fsrn.org. That's www.fsrn.org. This newscast was produced by Aaron Glantz. Headlines editor, Randy Zimmerman. Technical producer, Jade Patch-Seekins. Technical assistant, Matt Martin. We had web support from Vanessa Tate and Leslie Holmes. This newscast was produced at WMNF Radio in Tampa and the Independent Media Center in New York. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Please tune in again tomorrow for another edition of Free Speech Radio News.